The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio on this Monday, the 22nd of September 2025. It's approaching 4 minutes past nine, just turned. Great to have you on board for another week. And we have a busy show this day for you, of course. But it is after the weekend, so maybe there's something that you want us to talk about. Get in touch with us, 086 60 25 000, and use that number, of course, if you want to comment on some of the stuff we've got lined up for you over the course of the next 3 hours. If you want to give us a phone call, 07491 25 000, or your emails come in to us at comments@highlandradio.com. So let's have a look at the front of the newspapers and see what's making the headlines in that space. We'll start with the Derry People Donegal News, and 25,000 people gathered in Dublin at the weekend to take part in a national protest demanding urgent political intervention for the Irish language and the Gaeltacht. This is a protest we discussed on the show on Friday. On Saturday morning, busloads travelled from Donegal's Gaeltacht to the capital with local community groups, teachers, students, musicians, Donegal County councillors and TDs amongst them. Together they marched from Parnell Square to Leinster House, where Donegal took centre stage. The Derry News this morning: new legacy deal leaves a lot of questions to answer. Two men whose loved ones were killed by British soldiers in Belfast and Derry in the early 1970s have said a new legacy agreement will have to answer a lot of questions. Mickey McKinney, whose brother William was among 13 killed in Derry in the Bloody Sunday shooting in 1972, and John Teggart, whose father Danny was among the 10 killed in Ballymurphy in 1971, said they had both fought long and difficult battles for justice. They were speaking outside Belfast Crown Court following day four of the trial of a former paratrooper known as Soldier F, who has been charged with two counts of murder on Bloody Sunday. On to the Nationals now. We'll start with the Irish Independent, and they have a lot in there, of course, as you can imagine, a lot of presidential stuff, but they're focusing on page four. Landlords, they're selling up in regional towns after rent pressure zone extension. Now, in fairness, speaking to those in this sector, when these rent pressure zone suggestions were being floated, were saying that, look, it's tough enough being in this space. I'll just sell up, I'll get out. And it seems that's what people are doing. A flood of landlord-led home sales is sweeping across Ireland's regional towns following changes to the rent pressure zone rules. The new trend means that property just taken out of rental are now comprising between 40 and 80% of all homes sold in some locations during the past 3 months. So houses that were former rental properties are making up between 40 and 80% of new homes on the market. But I suppose they do turn into forever homes then, potentially, but it doesn't help with those looking to rent. The new wave of investor sales has come about as a result of the government's announcement in June to extend RPZs across the entire country. The increase is highlighted in the latest Real Estate Alliance Irish Independent Average House Price Index, which follows sale price trends of the staple family home type, the three-bed semi-detached. The increase in landlords selling up will cause a further decline in the national stock of rentals available. So at the moment, apparently a three-bed semi in County Donegal is worth €202,500. That's up 2.53%. It's the cheapest three-bed in the country. Leitrim, really quite surprisingly, I think, a three-bed semi there is €222,000, but we're bottom of the list at €202,000. And then if you head down to Kilkenny, €322,000, Waterford City €333,000. So dependent on where you are in the country, your three-bed semi, semi-detached, is there's a huge difference in their values. The Irish Daily Mail, we're into the last couple of days now as who will actually be able to contest the presidential election. A lot of people seem very keen for Maria Steen to be on the ballot. They see her as maybe an alternative to what's already there. And she is gathering a pace in terms of getting the approval she needs to get on the ballot. She's going down the route whereby you need 20 senators or TDs. That's the option she's chosen. She could be up to 17, 18 by the end of today, which would leave her, you know, just too shy. But reading on, Senator Michael McDowell, or McDowell, is emerging as the gatekeeper whose support Maria Steen will need to become a real game changer in the race for the presidency. In the aftermath of Sinn Féin's announcement that it's backing Catherine Connolly, which was the big game changer announcement, apparently, conservative parties and groups supporting Ms Steen are asking Mr McDowell to assist in ensuring that there is a diversity in the field of candidates going forward for election to the IRS next month. Independent Senator and former Attorney General Mr McDowell is perceived to have played the defining role in the coalition's humiliating defeat. And I'll just turn to page six here. Their humiliating defeat of the family and care referendum in March last year. It was defeated as people voted against plans to remove specific references to the valued position of mothers in Irish society. So there is a sense that it's 50-50 as to whether she will get over the line, but the sense being that you want, you know, maybe people with coming from different places in politics to make it a proper conversation, if you know what I'm saying. Staying with the presidential election, Jim Gavin, I don't know if you've seen the post being stuck up on social media about Jim Gavin. Some horrendous accusations being made against him, which he's completely rejected, of course, but, you know, of a very personal nature. I wouldn't even read them out, to be honest with you. But he is not happy about it, as none of us would be. Facebook owner Meta has removed a number of posts about Fianna Fáil presidential candidate Jim Gavin for violating its standards. This is the Irish Times, by the way. The tech giant is also understood to be investigating other pieces of content. The removed posts are understood to have been in violation of its community standards. It's expected that any further posts it identifies as being in breach will also be removed. It comes amid disquiet in Fianna Fáil over the proliferation of false information about its candidate on social media platforms. And some of the accusations, which are still up on X, have been related to me as fact. So it is actually really quite a disturbing development for anyone to have to bat that stuff off when you're just trying to focus on becoming president. Whether or not you want him to do, or whether you agree or disagree with him, you know, people putting up very salacious fake stuff about you, it's not playing the game properly, is it? Just as the temperatures dip, 11 degrees, potential for some grass frost this week, perhaps it's good news that the first of this winter's fuel allowance scheme payments are set to start this week. The means assessed payment will be paid for 28 weeks to 410,000 households across the state. It is made at the weekly rate of €33, or if preferred, by way of two instalment payments of €462 each. The scheme was recently expanded to allow more households to qualify this year. So from January 2025, the over 70s enhanced qualifying conditions were extended to people aged 66 and over. These enhanced conditions include a person aged over 66 years no longer has to be in receipt of a social protection payment to apply for the fuel allowance. So that just, I'm reading this because it might be useful to some of you listening. Meanwhile, a single person aged 66 or over can have means of €524 per week, while a couple can have means of €1,048 per week. In addition, the amount of capital that is disregarded was increased from 20 to 50,000. So as I say, that might be some good news to people out there. This has been covered widely, but I want to reach as many people as possible in relation to money mules, students becoming money mules. And it's one of those spaces where ignorance is not a defence. And what happens effectively is someone offers you money. They will say for one reason or another that they need you to put some money into your account and then take it out. And as I say, the Gardaí's attitude is that ignorance is not a defence. But we're also at a time where a lot of students are desperate. You know, they're just off to college and rents are high and the cost of food is high and all that kind of stuff. So important just to keep your guard about you, or keep your guard up and keep your wits about you. Almost 9.4 million was laundered through Irish money mule accounts in the 12 months to June 25, while a third of 18 to 24-year-olds say they or someone they know have been approached to take part. details of the extent to which naive Irish people are being manipulated by international crime gangs were released by the Banking and Payments Federation Ireland's Fraud Smart Initiative yesterday. The body said that while the amounts moved through these accounts vary, they typically range between 5 and 10,000 euro per case. Money mules are typically recruited by friends or via unsolicited social media approaches or text messages. These promise payments for allowing the use of the recipient's bank account to move stolen cash, either so it can be physically withdrawn or sent onwards abroad. Now, obviously, when they're pitching this to the student, they're not calling it stolen cash. They come up with some excuse about cards or this, that and done. So, as I say, people, you know, are potentially short on cash and could be high on risk of being exploited there. Lastly, in The Sun, fraudsters, thieves and drug dealers are among the prisoners most likely to be granted temporary release from Irish jails. Irish Prison Service data shows that nearly a quarter of criminals getting early release are serving sentences for controlled drug offences. The figures show on August 1st, a total of 612 people were temporarily free as the prison system grappled with record-breaking levels of overcrowding. Of those on release that day, 149 were in jail for drug crimes, 138 were serving sentences for theft or related offences. There were 51 out on temporary release who were guilty of attempts or threats to murder, assault and harassment. All right, there you go. Just in case you didn't know. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. That was a run through the papers. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after we take this quick break. Donaghy Ray has been criticised for linking autism to a lack of vitamins. But anyway, during a debate on a motion from Sinn Féin on special education, Mr. Healy Ray said, "Minister, it seems to me that autism and many of these complex needs are on the increase. We need to do more to find out what's causing it and if there is a reason." He added, "It seems to me that many more are presenting than in my younger days, and even when I was going to school, it didn't seem to be an issue at all at that time. Very few anyway. So I'm wondering, and I've asked this question here before in different debates, is there something causing it? A lack of some vitamins, or what is it? We need to address that part of it as well, ministers, because there could be something causing it." Right. John Joe McGinley is founder of autismdad.ie. John Joe, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners, and thank you so much for having me on.
It is good to have you on the programme, and unfortunately for those watching the stream, the issue with the sound from our video going through is not functioning properly at the moment, but it's something we're working on. Right, John Joe, why is this harmful in your view?
It's harmful in my view because Healy Ray, for all of some of the... When you look at him, he looks like to be sort of like a strange character. But he always says things that have a reason behind them. And this is part of a conspiracy theory that is now coming from Australia, because there was a naturopath, I don't really know what that is, who put up a video in Australia that said that autism in children can be cured and the addition of vitamins. Now, his organisation is called the School of Divine Health. But this also links into what will probably be announced in the next couple of days. I don't know if you've seen the reports from America. That the health secretary there, RFK, has he's put a lot of work into what he says has been the causes of autism, and they're about to announce that a commonly used medicine is, in their view, one of the reasons behind autism. I'm not going to say what it is because I'm not going to take part in the conspiracy theories, but it just shows you that the lack of focus on the real medicine and the real scientific evidence that is permeating from some of those that are now in power in America has now come to the floor of the doll. And that is very disturbing, because as any parent with a child with autism on autism spectrum will know, autism, nobody knows yet what causes autism. But the most important thing about having a child with autism is not pumping them full of medicines or pumping them full of vitamins. It's establishing right at the beginning early intervention that puts them into the health pathway. Because in that health pathway, it's speech and language, it's dietary, it's OT, its psychological assessment. That is far more important to the development of any child in the autism spectrum than any mad conspiracy theories about whatever vitamins you might want to put into them going forward. And I'm with the other members of the DAWL that have actually asked them to retract these comments, because, as I've said, this is just a conspiracy theory. It started in Australia and it's permeating around the globe, and it's disturbing for parents with children with autism because we know that it's not true. And one thing I'd like to highlight as well is that one of the key aspects of autism is that autism doesn't come alone. There's a thing that we've discussed it before, Greg, called AFRID, which is avoidance food restriction intake syndrome. And what that is, that, and as parents with children with autism will know, that a lot of children with autism have a very restricted diet. It's about bland foods. It's about foods with limited taste. And for all of Healy Ray's talk of it's the lack of vitamins that are causing autism, I'll tell you that most parents with children with autism are providing vitamin supplements to their children because of that restricted diet. It's not about to cure autism. It's because one of the aspects of autism is that restricted food intake. So again, I'd hate to call them ignorant, because I don't want you to be rude in any way, because obviously the people of Kerry have voted for them. You've got to respect democracy. But when somebody has that platform in our national parliament, they should be far more respectful of the children and the parents, and they need to be careful. And I hate to use the phrase because it's been misused, but we have to follow the science.
Yeah, but the problem it is
shown.
But it's almost fighting a losing battle, because you have these comments here, but then you also have the comments from Donald Trump as well, that are going to sort of, you know, blow this whole conversation wide open. Whether it's accurate or not, sadly, it is besides the point nowadays. I don't know why there is this type of focus right now. But, you know, when you've got people in our parliament, and of course then the leader of the free world, in inverted commas, throwing stuff out there, some of it's going to stick and it's going to change the conversation. And I just wonder what the motivation for all of this is.
Well, I think there's two aspects to that, I think. The first one has to be, one, when you look at the comments on platforms like X of what Hillary has said, the rabbit holes that people are going down with the conspiracy theories on autism are bizarre. And also, if you look at some of the things that these people are saying, they're from a very certain wing of the political spectrum. Now, I'm not going to get involved in that, but also maybe that's why President Trump is going to get involved in the next couple of days with an announcement. I believe the British press are trailing it. Mm. Of a medicine that he claims will cure autism. But once again, when you look into the science and you look into what the medical practitioners are saying, there is no scientific evidence to prove that anything that President Trump will say in the next couple of days.
Can I just quote what he said? He said at the Charlie Kirk event, "Tomorrow we're going to have one of the biggest announcements, really, medically, I think, in the history of our country. We're going to be doing it with Bobby and Oz and all of the professionals. I think you're going to find it to be amazing. I think we've found an answer to autism."
Yes, and he also claimed during the COVID pandemic that he had a cure for COVID, and we all know how that turned out. I think what we have to do, listen, hand on heart, anybody, even if it was President Trump, if somebody could do a magic button, but hey, we as parents with children with autism, we know that that's not the case. And even then, if you look at the spectrum of autism, and I know it's an often used phrase and I've used it before, but it's true. If you look at one child with autism, you've met one child with autism. The spectrum is so wide and so diverse that it would truly be a wonder of scientific, if you'd have a panacea.
Well, it wouldn't be coming from a couple of politicians. It would be coming from, in normal channels, this would be coming through, releases from medical professionals.
It'd be medical professionals. It would probably come through the World Health Organization.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that would be after years and years of properly medicated and monitored trials. Because where is the scientific evidence? There is no scientific evidence that's there. Going back to Healy Ray, now we know how he said it. It is this conspiracy theory that's growing arms and legs. And to a certain extent, he should be more careful. He should follow the science, and he should also be more respectful for parents with children on the autism spectrum. We know that it's not about pills. It's about support. If he was doing his job in the Dáil properly, he should be lobbying the health minister for more support in food and dietary, for more support in speech and language, and also making sure that the waiting lists for children to even be diagnosed to get into the pathway of support are reduced, because that's one of the biggest scandals in our health systems at the moment. We have parents sitting there who know that their children are on the autism spectrum, but they can't get the support they need because they can't get entry into the health pathway because they don't have a diagnosis. And then they're waiting months and years. And if the only alternative is to pay thousands of euros for a private diagnosis, which bizarrely is usually provided by somebody who works for the HSE who's doing private work.
Yeah, okay.
That's what Healy Ray should be doing, not spreading conspiracy theories.
Yeah, and it feels like it's going to distract from trying to right some of the wrongs that you talk of there. Okay, we'll watch on with interest. Thanks so much for your insight, as always, and we'll check in again, because I have a feeling this is going to be like in other areas. There's a shift, and it's not always the right thing either. Thanks so very much indeed. That was John Joe McGinley, founder of AutismDad.ie. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. So as we say, we've heard from Danny Healy Ray. He believes kids aren't getting enough vitamins. And Donald Trump, he and RFK Jr., both of they and Oz, apparently, whoever Oz is, we're going to have one of the biggest announcements really medically, I think, in the history of our country. We're going to be doing it with Bobby and Oz and all of the professionals. I think you're going to find it to be amazing. I think we found an answer to autism. So it's an incredibly strong, almost bizarre statement, I think it has to be said. Right. Hi, just a bit of a rant here, says a listener. And if I could be kept anonymous, of course. They work in Letterkenny University Hospital, and we've confirmed that. I'm currently 35 weeks pregnant with severe sciatica, and I had an appointment today, and of course, no parking. I had to end up parking at the back of St. Connell's to walk over. With the back pain, you can imagine how long that took. My point is, why in this day and age is there no designated parking for heavily pregnant people, even to be closer to the clinic? It's an absolute joke. And there are other groups of individuals as well that would need better access, you know, older people, etc. So I don't know what's going on there, but there are obviously people that need to have closer access. I'm a concerned parent, says another listener. I dropped my child off at school this morning, and the stench of raw sewage was something shocking. All the windows are open in the place to air it. Should our children have to go to school if there's a strong smell like that? Wow, interesting. I'm not sure if there's any harm in the smell, but yeah, blooming hell. You wouldn't want to be sending your kids in, would you? Caller says, you can always tell what side of the political divide someone in is on by their stance on autism causation. Left-wingers always defer to the exponentially corrupt medical establishment. Right-wingers always attempt to seek evidence-based causation and do not trust the corrupt medical establishment. But also, in the middle of that's the kids, right, and the parents and what have you. So are we politicising absolutely everything at this stage? Right, I'm joined on the programme by Deputy Leader of Sinn Féin, Deputy Piers Doherty. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's great to have you on the programme. Right, last time I spoke to you, yous didn't know what yous were doing, really. Like, in other words, you were still trying to decide what the party was going to do. I got a sense from you that you had reservations over the party backing Catherine Connolly because you wanted to hear her views on certain matters. Was this the big news? Was this the game changer that Marilyn McDonald had been flagging?
I think it is a game changer, Greg. There's no doubt about that. You have the largest party on the island of Ireland coming in behind Catherine Connolly. You also have, for the first time ever, the combined opposition supporting a candidate on her own merits, somebody who's independent from government, somebody who has a very strong view in relation to Ireland's place in the world, to Ireland's the importance of Ireland's neutrality, you know, issues that she has championed for many, many years, including the issues of disability, those who have been left without a voice. So I think it is quite something that you have all of those parties now on the left, that combined opposition coming in behind her. And I think it's injected a huge momentum into her campaign. I know on the streets here at the weekend, when I was out and about at the different games, football games and just about, and also up at the major Irish language rally in Dublin, that people were really, really excited that we now have big momentum behind Catherine Connolly's campaign. So yeah, I think it absolutely can be a game changer. But look, like everything, Greg, it's in the hands of the public, and we don't take it for granted.
No, but what does it say though when the leading party in opposition can't come up with its own candidate, though? Like, does that not send a message in and of itself?
No, we can come up with their own candidate. There's plenty of candidates that could contest the election for Sinn Féin. I think, obviously there was speculation around Mary Lou, myself, there was speculation around others. And look, all of that was in the mix. Like, we made it very, very clear in a very honest way with the public that we weren't taking anything off the table. And look, the opinion polls were out, and you could see that I think the last opinion poll had Mary Lou neck and neck leading the polls. Now, polls are polls, we all know that, but it shows that we were there challenging. So, as I discussed with you about 2 weeks ago, Greg, the issue here for us is twofold. We have two objectives. One is, and the main objective, and we make no bones about it, is to get Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael out of government and for Sinn Féin to lead a government in the future, because that's the only way we're going to deal with the big issues, whether it's hospital overcrowding, you know, children with additional needs being let down over and over again, the housing situation, you know, the defective blocks nightmare that's going on in our own county. So that's the only way that we're going to achieve that. But the other objective is to make sure that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are not rewarded by electing a president into the Áras. In Catherine Connolly, we have a candidate that speaks to the values of what Sinn Féin does in terms of our place within the world, and in terms of speaking up for those most in need, of challenging the status quo. And in our conversations with her, and thankfully we've heard her speak about her dedication to United Ireland, the fact that she is a United Irelander, the fact that she wants to see United Ireland. And I have no doubt that in Catherine Connolly's campaign, and indeed in her presidency, if she is elected to as the next president, that a United Ireland and the preparation for that will be a big part of her time.
How close were you to being the candidate? Were you asked whether or not it's something that you wanted to do?
Look, the thing for us in Sinn Féin was, first of all, to make the strategic decision as to whether we stand ourselves or whether we stand, or whether we support Catherine Connolly. That was really the only alternative that was there. And obviously, when Mary Lou made it clear that her name was not in the offering, then that put focus in relation to myself. So of course, my name was in consideration. I was of the view, and so are the leadership of the view, that the best thing for us to do is to actually elect Catherine Connolly as Wictor na hÉireann. That is the best thing for us to do. And because I believe that I have a huge role to play, along with Mary Lou and the rest of the leadership, in challenging this government and replacing this government at the earliest opportunity in the next election. And look, I have unfinished work here in terms of Donegal, and I know people right across, and I really, really thank them for all the messages and support in different ways. But there was a very much, I must say, overwhelming view there. People wanted me in the Dáil. People wanted me to challenge and campaign and fight for them and be their champion on different issues. And I'm going to continue to do that, but that isn't my ambition. My ambition is actually to lead along with Mary Lou, along with other parties of the left. And I think this is a good example of Sinn Féin. Yes, we could have thrown our hat in the rings. Yes, we're conscious of the polls where we were kind of very well up there in terms of the presidential race. We could have done that, but we actually see the importance of a combined opposition and the importance of that there, not just for the presidential election, but also for the next general
election.
Well,
that's what I was going to say. Is this sort of setting out the stall that shows parties of a like mind can work together? And arguably in the last general election, that really didn't happen in terms of, you know, an awful lot was relying on the public to make up their own minds, you know, which side they wanted to sort of transfer to, etc. So do you think this will see a more organised position come the next general election now?
Yeah, I think you know, you're right in relation to probably the offering in terms of the last general election. Did people feel that there was an alternative there to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, which are now two parties that, you know, have been in government or supporting each other in government for the last decade. So, you know, they are very much joined at the hip, and people are throwing Jim Gavin very difficult questions, asking him to differentiate between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. That's, you know, you would need a master's in politics to be able to come up with that one. But look, so there is an opportunity for us to show to the electorate that, yes, parties on the left, parties who want to see a different vision of Ireland, parties who want to resolve the housing crisis, the health crisis, making sure that they, you know, the benefits of a boosting and booming economy are actually felt by people and communities on the ground. There's an onus on all of us to show that we can work together. That said, we're individual parties. There are differences within the individual parties. That's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. And, you know, we'll go into the campaign, the next campaign, on that way. But I think what you've seen probably in the last year is something that you haven't seen ever in the history of politics here, and that is a more cohesive, a more united, an opposition which are working on key issues, whether it's special education, whether it's housing, where there's a key kind of platform and where we're working together. And I think this is another step. Like, it would be naive of me to say the fact that for the first time you've got the combined opposition coming in behind, and not just behind, not just endorsing Catherine Connolly's campaign. We're going to be centrally involved in this campaign. Last night, some of our TDs were out campaigning with Catherine Connolly, knocking doors. That's what we were going to see right across the island of Ireland now over the next while. People will be motivated, people will be energised, people are going to be centrally involved trying to ensure that people who support Sinn Féin, and many of them do in Donegal, we're now saying, please, please support Catherine Connolly. She's the best person for numerous reasons to be further in the hearing after this election.
You know, like, whether it matters or not, or what the role of the president is or isn't, you know, someone like Catherine Connolly, very much opposed to the triple lock being done away with and what have you, and maybe the public are naive in thinking that, you know, someone from a different political background would hold the government to account or maybe reflect what the views of the public out there are. So on the issue of, say, for instance, you know, if the triple lock is done away with, in very simple languages, it comes before Catherine Connolly as president, hypothetically, she has the option to sign it in, or she also has the option, if she believe it to be unconstitutional, to refer that to the Supreme Court. And then obviously the usual trope comes out then, well, you know, if we refer it to the Supreme Court, then it can't be challenged again. And if the Supreme Court say it's constitutional, that's it. And it all gets a bit wishy-washy, and people who are expecting change right then end up down the line realising actually it's not really change at all.
Yeah, look, I can hear that, and I've made my point. How do you deliver the maximum change? You actually replace this government, and that was part of our strategic thinking in relation to, you know, making sure that we have our team are, you know, there to fight the next election the best way, so that we can deliver that real change that people need. But I wouldn't underestimate the importance of the presidency, and I think Michael D. Higgins has served with distinction. The presidency, yes, has all of those powers that you mentioned, Greg, in relation to referring bills to the Council of State, Supreme Court, all of that. But I think the most important and most powerful thing that the president has isn't even in the constitution. It is the voice. It is their voice. It is her voice. It is his voice. It is about speaking to the values of the nation, to the values of what Ireland is. And a no-brainer here in relation to this contest. We have two candidates for all of their different, you know, strengths and weaknesses. who are government candidates. And we have another candidate in Catherine Connolly, who is an experienced legislator who comes from the legal profession, who has always spoken up, always been on the right side, in my view, in relation to those that are marginalised, to those that were disadvantaged, speaking up for, you know, those with special needs, speaking up for those who aren't in the privileged few. And I think that that's really important. And that's what Michael Dee did over the last while as well. He used very carefully and in line with the Constitution his voice to echo the sentiments of what he was hearing and what he believes is the heartbeat, is the pulse of the nation. And I think Catherine Connolly has that. I think that's why you've got so many different political parties and independents coming in and saying Catherine Connolly is the best person for the President of Ireland. So I have no doubt. Like, look, the big thing for me is also she is independent from government. You know, she's not somebody who's just going to take her line from government or toe the line. And we've seen some of that from other candidates so far. She's going to speak her mind. She'll do it in line with the Constitution. And I think that's exactly what we need at this time. And it is a time of change. Like, there's no doubt about it. The next 7 years will see massive change on the island of Ireland, not least in relation to the referendums on Irish unity. And I think having a president who recognises the importance of those articles in their constitution about the desire of the Irish people, of the Irish nation, to be united, I think somebody who will speak to that, I think, is also really, really important at this time.
Okay, well, we shall see. There's different views coming in, as you can imagine, but that's democracy, isn't it? We can have different views. You know, it's fantastic. Let's keep that. All right, Piers, thanks very much for your time. Look after yourself. Bye-bye. That is Deputy Piers Doherty again. Interesting comments from him. And apologies again if you're watching on the stream. We are resolving that technical issue. I'm sure Caroline at this moment is ringing Oisin saying, Greg's in bother here, you know. He's on holidays, is he? Okay, we could be in bother. Rightio, anyway, stay tuned. You'll be able to hear much more of the show going forward. It is the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. It is Monday. It's the start of a new week. What do you think of the presidential campaign? Are you getting into it a little bit? Do you have someone you're interested in? Is there someone there that you would want to see on the ballot that isn't there? It's all very interesting, in fact. And funny, you know, last Friday, you know, from a pretty decent source, it was flagged that Donegal County Council were going to be meeting tomorrow, and that some back channeling had taken place to get a particular candidate potentially over the line if they needed one more council to back them. And then all of a sudden that deal or that conversation kind of fell through, and nothing, it seems, is coming from it. So we'll see. Now, the legacy deal between the British and Irish governments is a night and day improvement on what is currently in place. That's according to the Tánaiste. Simon Harris said he accepted agreement has not been easy, but the new package will provide maximum truth, justice and accountability to victims. The new framework agreed between the British and Irish governments was unveiled on Friday by Harris and Northern Ireland Secretary Hilary Benn. Right, now, so let's get the views of Emmett McConomy, whose 11-year-old brother Stephen was killed by a soldier in Derry in 1982, because these are the opinions, really, I think, that matter, those that are directly affected by it. Emmett, thank you for joining me this morning.
Morning, Greg. You're welcome.
Right, there's an awful lot in this, isn't it? And it's an awful lot, I think, to expect us to sort of be able to figure out precisely what it might mean in certain cases and searches for truth and justice, etc. But what's your interpretation of what's been announced, Emmett?
I think, first and foremost, we need time to digest what has been announced. On the face of it, we give it a cautious welcome. That being said, what legislation comes through, we would need to see the detail of that, because let's be honest, the British government has made more than enough promises that it's failed to keep over the years when it's come to legacy. So we cautiously welcome it, but we need to see the detail within the legislation. Now, there is some concerns there. There's the automatic concern that directly would affect me and my family is that the special measures that they're proposing to put in to protect ex-servicemen, the ex-army. So those are concerning for me. Mm. But I think on the face of it, I would give it a cautious welcome. The fact that the Irish government is going to have some oversight to it is definitely a benefit for victims. But let's see how it pans out. Let's see how quickly the British government and the Irish government can move on this. And let's see the detail that's in this legislation, that it is victim-centred, and the needs of victims are first and foremost and should be to the front and centre of all the legislation that they pass.
You talked about, well, first and foremost, the Legacy Act, the Legacy Bill, that was terrible. So if that was our starting position, this obviously is a dramatic improvement, I'd imagine.
Well, we did take a massive step back when the British government tried to impose that on victims here in the North. But you've seen from the backlash from everyone, all the political parties and all the victims groups were absolutely united in this bill of shame that they tried to push on top of us. Victims won't roll over, whether that be for the British government or indeed the Irish government. We definitely will not roll over. We have spent upwards of 50 years campaigning relentlessly to get the answers that we need and deserve. Regardless of what legislation the British government or Irish government have pushed through, it needs to meet the needs of all the victims.
You talked about the need for proper buy-in from victims. What did you mean by that, if you feel you haven't already touched on that specifically?
Well, we touched on the Legacy Bill previous, and you could see that the trust was eroded. Whatever little trust there ever was between victims and the British government, it definitely was eroded. So I think now the British government and the Irish government have to go a long way to gain the trust for victims to engage with any of the services and the legislation that they put through. Because let's be honest, when the Legacy Bill, the previous Legacy Bill, was pushed upon us, it was clear that it was being driven to protect the needs of soldiers. Mm. It was not there to meet the needs of victims. So trust has been eroded. When we look at the ICIR that was set up, it's staffed, and the head of that is an ex-RUC man. You know, like, so let's be honest, we are never going to engage with a body that even the optics look wrong. But when you can see that you can't have people who are so invested in the past reinvestigate in the past, and we've got to question their impartiality, whether they be ex-RUC men or not.
Yeah. Okay, Emmett. Listen, we watch on. Thank you very much indeed for your time. I do appreciate it.
Take care,
Emmett. Good luck to you. You too. Emmett McEconomy there. Now, some of your comments coming in as we head towards the news and obituary notices. As a Sinn Féin supporter, I will not be campaigning for Catherine Connolly. I'm disappointed they took so long to make a decision. We are a party of our own right, and whether we lost the election, we should have stood in our own right as the largest party of opposition. Catherine Connolly stood her own ground. She didn't wait on anyone to support her. Why didn't Sinn Féin field a candidate and ask the others to join them? Well, she was out there early. Who would that candidate be? I don't know. It's a toughie. But you heard from Piers Doherty. I put that question that you've just asked to him. So you're either satisfied or not, I suppose, with his answers. Come on, Greg. It's unprecedented that so many parties would get behind one presidential candidate. Don't let Piers, says the listener. Yeah, it is. I just thought, you know, hinting that the person would have good Irish and that this would be a game changer, that for me, from what Sinn Féin was saying, Marilyn McDonald was saying, was pointing in a different direction, but here we are. Don't let Pierce away with Connolly not going with neutrality, says a listener. Another, the president's job is basically a concierge, as you are a meet and greet. You have no power. Pierce has listed all the problems that Sinn Féin are going to fix. What money is going to fix this? Well, they, in fairness, like all parties, they have it budgeted. Whether you agree or disagree, of course, is a different conversation. We constantly ask why so many young people are leaving this country, says a listener. There's simply too much cronyism and nepotism. Just look at the struggle independent individuals have in trying to stand for election, an opportunity which should be denied to no citizen of this country. More comments. Nice and busy for a Monday morning, by the way. Greatly appreciated. People have lost faith and trust in the health service and medical science in general because these can be influenced by government, who are influenced by large pharmaceutical companies. This is what's happening when money and greed takes over. But there's a bathwater and baby situation here, and there's people who are, you know, quite rightly very sceptical about health and medicine to begin with, for lots of reasons. They could have a querying mind, or it could be born of a life experience. So there are people that are ripe for someone like Donald Trump to come out and say things that might not necessarily be medically sound. And we might have Donald Trump say this, that, and that, and then medical professionals come out and say another thing, and people are trying to discredit the medical professionals because, of course, you're working with Big Pharma and the other guy's going to clean the swamp and all that kind of stuff. I just hope there's no lives lost in that mix. You know, medicine being a political conversation, maybe it has to be, but I'd have my concerns. Anyway, we shall see.